Okay, Blind Cool Tech, I have the distinguished honor of talking to Mr. John Calloway, who was the principal of Governor Moorhead School from 1964 to 1983. We're located at the Holiday Inn Brownstone in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is July 22nd, 2006. Mr. Calloway, the microphone is yours. Go right ahead.
Thank you very much for that kind introduction. I'm going to give you a brief history of the Governor Moorhead School. They started trying people to get something started as early as 1827. However, nothing happened of that.
Talking about mics. There you go.
Governor Moorhead, excuse me, but the John M. Moorhead tried to get things going, and he had a little bit of trouble. In 1842, they ignored his request for ways to educate the blind and deaf. But in 1845, they did establish a school, and the official name was North Carolina Institution for the Education of the Deaf and the Dumb and the Blind, and that name stayed with it for many, many years.
Now,
and
I was dumb. What was that?
The word dumb meant could not speak.
Right.
But that is why they had that. Now, the doors officially opened on May 1, 1845 in rented quarters 2 miles west of the Capitol on Hillsborough Street. Now, they were in rented quarters. They opened with 7 deaf pupils, but by the end of the session, they had 17. And the ages that they accepted then were between ages of 8 and 30. I'll have more to say about the different ages later on. Now, the General Assembly was so generous in their appropriation, $5,000 annually for the operation of the school. And the title of the school administrator was principal, and it remained that title until 1918, and we'll talk about that more. Land was purchased on Caswell Square, about 4 acres. The cornerstone for the first permanent building was laid on April 14, 1849. However, the first blind children did not arrive until 1851. Now, the ages of the 68 pupils they said they had in 1852, the ages ranged from 9 to age 35, if you can believe that. They only had 1 9-year-old. They had 4 10-year-olds, 2 11. And then I'm going to skip over. They had 3 22-year-olds, 3 24-year-olds. 2 26-year-olds, 5 that were 27, 4 pupils who were 28, 2 who were 29, but they had 1 that was 35 years old. And you can see why admission requirements were really going to come into play later on. Now, by 1854-56, they had 16 blind pupils. They had 2 teachers in the scholastic department, and they had 1 music teacher. Music did play an important part, and I won't be saying much about that, but we have done some research, and music has, as you know, has played an important part for years. Now, in 1862, the terms for admission were ages 7 through 21. And parents of deaf students had to pay $130 for 10 months. Parents of 100 blind pupils had to pay $175 for 10 months. But they had a provision. Those who were unable to pay could have a citizen go before a justice of the peace and file an affidavit. Then the parents could send the children without charge. Now, the school was open during the Civil War, except for a short 6-month period of time. Now, in 1865 and 66, a comment was made that the buildings were in poor repair through the lack of funding during the war. But the staff did include the principal, a vice principal, three teachers of deaf-mute, three teachers of blind, a music teacher, a matron, a housekeeper, and they had a foreman for the book bindery, the broom shop, and the shoe shop, and the broom shop was really for the blind. And the budget was up to about $25,000. Now, a comment was made in the biennial report on, and I'll give even the page 48 of the 1866-68. And I thought this was very interesting concerning its Caswell Square. It says, a proper system of sewage and drainage should be perfected to carry the filth which necessarily accumulates on the premises. This can be done with a small expenditure, as there is sufficient fall from the grounds to a branch about 300 yards distant. You can imagine what the water quality people would say today if you tried to dump your sewage in the branch.
Yeah.
By 1869, North Carolina became the first state in the United States to open a school for Afro-American students. And they opened what they called, and this is in right, they called it the Colored Department, rented quarters in Southeast Raleigh. Now, the interesting thing is, you see, we were still occupied by Union troops. The War Department agreed to pay the rent and supply rations if the school would supply the teachers. Now, in 1871, they added another music teacher to the staff. And by then, they had 141 white students, 52 colored students, and there were 132 deaf and dumb and 64 blind. There were 52 white and 12 colored in the blind department. By now, Caswell Square was so crowded and the colored department needed a permanent location. And have you ever heard this day and time school people crying for buildings in this century? Well, they were very blunt back then. In fact, it was said, do we tell Mrs. So-and-so that we have no place for her child? Well, money was appropriated to build a colored department on South Bloodworth Street, and it remained there until 1932. They also provided funds to add to the white department on Caswell Square. And incidentally, there's still one building on Caswell Square that was a school for the blind. They left there in 1923, and that building is being renovated now. It's interesting that all of the appropriations stipulated that brick would come from the penitentiary. Now, our first graduating class was 1872. They had two blind students, two deaf students. Well, in 1873-74, the colored department opened in their new facilities on South Bloodworth Street. By 1880, we had 115 deaf and 91 blind students. Some of the admission requirements, and I told you this would come up later, ages 10 to 21, sound mind, good moral character, and the students today would like this one very much, will work 2.5 hours daily. Now, by 1888, they had 164 deaf and 123 blind. And a report that year, I found a very interesting statement regarding health. This is 1888. This is a quote. We believe no institution in the country with the same number of inmates can show such a record of health. And what would we do if we called our students inmates this day and time?
Correct, is it?
We would all be in trouble. Now, by 1892-94, I noticed that three vocations mentioned in this report for the blind: mattress making, cane seating, and piano tuning. Now, the need for piano tuning had been mentioned by Mr. Simpson in reports in three or four places earlier years. I just did not bring this up. But in 1892 to 94, the principal's salary was $150 a month. But the teacher pay ranged from a high of 100 to a low of 20. You see, each teacher had to negotiate their salary. And so some of them were good negotiators, and apparently some of them were not too good. But in 1894, it became crowded, and they had, and I think 1891, appropriated money to build a school for the deaf in Morganton, North Carolina. And in 1894, all of the white deaf students did move to Morganton. Now, in 1902 and 1904, there was a quote that I would like to use again, and it says, "Our school is one of the four largest of its kind in the nation, and the Department for the Colored Race is the largest, the very best, and best equipped of its kind to be found." And that was in the Biennial Report, page 9, 1902 to 1904. But in 1905, a good name change came about. They got rid of this North Carolina Institution for the Education of the Deaf and the Dumb and the Blind, and we became State School for the Blind and Deaf. In 1908, they passed a compulsory attendance law. Before 1908, it was voluntary if you sent a blind or deaf student to school, but then it was required. In 1913, they began work on an out-of-town campus for white students, but it was interrupted by World War I. In 1918, following the unexpected death of Mr. Ray, the principal, Mr. Lineberry was appointed in his place, and they changed the name to Superintendent. Now, Mr. Lineberry had been on our board for 11 years, and at that time he was the president of Chowan College in Murfreesboro, North Carolina. Well, this out-of-town facility for white students was finished in 1923, and it opened. And it's known today as the Ash Avenue campus, and it's no longer out of town. In 1925, Mr. Lineberry worked and got the high school accredited by the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools. Now, in 1932, the state had already appropriated money, and they had built a new school for the color department, and it moved from South Bloodworth Street to 3 miles out of town from Raleigh on the Smithfield Highway. This is known as the Garner Road campus, and it's no longer 3 miles out of town. It's in town. Mr. M.H. Crockett was named principal of the Garner Road campus shortly after the move. And by then, our budget for the schools were up to about over $200,000. In 1941, at the State School for the Blind and Deaf in Raleigh, the two campuses, our attendance was 408. Now, in 1944 to 46, they got to naming buildings. They named one cottage for Mr. William Cook, who was the first principal. Now, Mr. Cook was principal from 1845 until about 1859 or 60. Then he resigned. He later came back and taught in the deaf department until 1875. And a cottage was named for Mr. John Simpson, who taught math and music for 57 years, ending in 1924. They named the gymnasium for Mr. John Ray, who was principal superintendent from 1896 until he passed away in 1918. They named a cottage for Mr. Hugh Griffin, who was principal for 26 years, ending in 1945. And they named a building for Mr. Cater Cox, who taught music and piano tuning
for 47 years, and I'm not sure exactly when that was named. And they named Lanberry Hall for Mr. Lanberry, who retired in 1945. And Mr. Peeler became superintendent then, and that was when Mr. Griffin retired. Now, one of the first things Mr. Peeler did was to get the board to authorize teachers to be paid on their teacher certification rather than on a contractual basis. And I'm sure that a lot of the teachers who were not good negotiators were very happy when that came about.
When did Mr. Lanberry pass away?
I'm not sure when Mr. Lanberry passed away, but he retired in 1945. Now, by 1947-48 at the State School for the Blind campuses in Raleigh, there were 168 white blind students. There were 103 black blind students. There were 137 black deaf students. Now, in 1963, the General Assembly authorized the Board of Directors to change the name of the school. And in 1965, it became the Governor Moorhead School. And the Board of Directors that year adopted a resolution to desegregate the white and Negro departments. And in 1977-1, desegregation was completed. The black deaf were moved to Morganton and the Wilson School for the Deaf. Vocational education was expanded, and orientation and mobility was expanded considerably. In fact, we had two orientation mobility instructors on each campus at that time. Now, in 1972, we did a reaccreditation of the high school by Southern Association of Colleges and Schools, and we did the initial accreditation of the elementary and the high school by the Southern Association and the National Accreditation Council of Services for the Blind. Now, all of our students were moved from the Garner Road campus to the Ash Avenue campus in the mid-70s. And at that time, we had approximately 440 visually impaired students on the Ash Avenue campus. We were extremely crowded. But at this time, the talk of least restrictive environment was raising its head. Public schools were being required to provide services for the blind and deaf students. And let me say, there are now many qualified teachers of visually impaired working in the public schools today. And consequently, the public schools are now educating many or most of the children that we could have served if things were the way they were years and years ago.
I wish I hadn't done it. I look back at it now and regret it doing it.
But now, we're proud of our past. We're proud of what the school is accomplishing now. You see, they have many teachers who are working in the public schools who really are employees of the Governor Moorhead School. I know they're at least 35.
They're called resource teachers, aren't they?
Yes. And now, I'm confident that the people will be proud of what they're accomplishing now and in future years of the Governor Moorhead School.
You can't turn the clock back.
You can't turn the clock back. And I do thank you for allowing me to make this presentation.
You got to tell us one more joke now.
One more joke. Okay, I had a friend that opened a new business, so I sent flowers to him. And
that's the one I wanted.
I went by to see the flowers, and the flowers said, "Rest in peace." Well, I called the florist, and I was really upset with him. He said, "You think you're upset? You should see what do you think the family said that got the flowers that said congratulations on your new location." Thank you.
Thank you.